Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show.
We're going to have a really exciting show today. We have attorney David Galla with the World Service Authority with us today as our special guest.
We're so happy for him to be here on our show.
We really are. Lana, would you like to introduce our guest and read his bio for us?
Yes. So David Gallup is the CEO of the World Service Authority. The World Service Authority specializes in promoting, implementing, and educating about human rights, world citizenship, and world law. Mr. Gallup is president of the World Service Authority. And this organization, which is a global public service human rights organization, was founded in 1954. In addition to that, his role as president, he also served as general counsel since 1992 and previously as vice president since 1994. Prior to working at the World Service Authority, WSA, Mr. Gallup was a legal research consultant, conducting research on constructing contracts and mechanics, and Dean's Fellow at the Washington College of Law's International Human Rights Law Clinic, Washington, D.C., where he researched asylum and international human rights issues, developed and maintained a human rights document library, and coordinated a human rights education workshop and represented asylum applicants. He is also a member of the World Jurist and World Space Bar Association. For 15 years, he was Secretary of the United Nations Associated Task Forces on UN Restructuring and on Culture of Peace. He maintains active involvement in his local community, and he has raised funds for tuition assistance as a local alumni interviewer for the Admission Department of Washington University, and is president and treasurer on the board of the Local Neighborhood Association. His publications, including a future article on the periodical Current World Leaders, International Issues and Letters to the Editor in the New York Times and Wall Street.
Right. And I am familiar with the World Service Authority going all the way back to the 1990s, mid-90s, I believe, when I first became familiar with this organization. And I've been following it ever since, and I've been really interested in the work that's being done with the World Service Authority. And I'm so grateful to have you on our show today. David, would you like to come in and just introduce yourself to us and maybe, you know, talk about your experiences?
Yes, sure. Yes, David and Dr. Lana, thank you so much for allowing me to participate in this evening's discussion. I'm delighted to be speaking with you.
Thanks for coming to our show.
Well, my pleasure. Yeah. And I know that one of our goals at the World Service Authority, where I work, is to raise the legal and political consciousness of humanity to a higher level. And I know your goals in your lives is to raise the consciousness vibration of humanity to a higher level. So we're working on a very similar goal and a similar plane here. And I think that's wonderful to that you've reached out to me and to World Service Authority and to World Citizens to talk a little bit about what is world citizenship and what that means to me, what it meant to the founder of World Service Authority, a man named Gary Davis. My bio is kind of boring in comparison to Gary Davis, the founder of the organization where I've been working for the past 23 years. He was a Broadway star. He was then conscripted into World War II, where he became a bomber pilot and was forced, as any soldier is, to drop bombs on not just military targets, but unfortunately on civilians. When he came back from the war, he was very disillusioned with the whole war system. His brother was killed during the war, and he wanted to get out of that system. And it was his desire to change the world from a world separated into many different nation states to the world as it really is, which is one world, one humanity. And it was his brave decision to, even though he was a decorated, revered sort of hero and bomber pilot, to renounce all that, to give up his U.S. citizenship officially, legally, and hand in his U.S. passport. And, of course, the second he stepped out of the U.S. embassy in Paris, he was in France, where he renounced illegally, and he had to come up with a new paradigm, a new way to exist that hadn't existed before, which was as a world citizen. He said, I give up that lower level allegiance in favor of a higher one, in favor of supporting humanity and the earth. So he led a very, very interesting life. He was imprisoned 34 times for his world citizenship status, that is, for his claim to be only a world citizen and not to carry any lower level allegiance. He's traveled all over the world, though, with the world passport that he created. And back in 1953, he created a government of, by, and for the people of the world with other world citizens. There were about 1 million people who had registered as world citizens with the registry he had created in Paris. And then, like I said, not long after that, he created the World Citizen Government and then founded the World Service Authority, which is the organization where I work at now. And I came into the organization after it had been in existence for almost just a little bit under shy of 40 years. Now, this year is actually our 60th anniversary. And I have to say, I really feel honored and happy to have worked with Gary Davis for the past 23 years up until his death last summer. And to learn from him, he had a couple gurus in his life, and he was sort of my guru, I guess you could say, in teaching me about wisdom and what it means to be a human being, what it means to have rights and responsibilities that we claim and how to claim them. It changed my life, and unlike most lawyers, I've dedicated my life to protecting humanity and the earth. I think many lawyers, just because of the rat race that they're in, are there just for the holy dollar, so to speak, and that's not at all what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is the consciousness raising. So I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah. David, are you basically carrying on from Gary? Has he sort of passed the
He's passed
the button
on
to you? Wow.
David's been involved with the World Service Authority, as he said, since many couple of decades now, right?
Yeah. Gary was the founder of the organization, and for several years, probably the first 25 years ago, he was also the president of World Service Authority. He let the reins go of, in a sense, of World Service Authority back in the early 1980s, and so there were a couple other presidents before me at World Service Authority, because at that point he was very busy traveling. He opened up a branch office of World Service Authority in Tokyo and traveled to Berlin when the wall was coming down. He traveled to the Earth Summit in Rio, traveled to India for several different world jurist conferences. I mean, like I said, he traveled all over the world, and for many of those last like I said, just about 23, 24 years, I was there working with him, mostly working in our World Service Authority's legal department, promoting human rights, world citizenship, providing legal backup to individuals who found themselves in difficult positions, like found themselves being stateless or a refugee due to war and violence and persecution. And then although I haven't given up that role completely, I'm still the chief attorney of the organization. We have a legal department staffed by lawyers and law students from around the world who participate in our legal department as trainees and help the public during the time that they're working with us. And then, as you had mentioned, Dr. Lana, I became president in 1999, and was working with Gary, traveling with Gary, various places, like to there was a World Peace Conference in The Hague where we had a booth to talk to the public. It was the largest World Peace Conference ever, actually, where we talked to the global public. And many times there were conferences here in America that we would go to together. So, like I said, I did learn a lot from him. And you're right, Dr. Lana, it is a question of carrying on his legacy that he gave basically up his entire adult life for the idea of world citizenship. I mean, he had a promising career on Broadway. He was in the first television show on CBS with Ray Bolger. He could have just gone on to Hollywood and probably been a well-known movie star. But he gave that all up. And I really think it was because of the devastation of World War II and how that affected him personally.
The whole concept of having a united world and being a citizen of the world. It's so, you know.
Well, as we know, on a spiritual level, we are one and we are connected. And I know that our listeners must, I don't know how many people are listening. We have quite a following in the spiritual community, and I'm sure they're fascinated by what you're doing and by the amazing life that Gary led and the work that he did for
it's
the
remarkable.
World and
get
the positive contribution that you're now giving. We thank you so much for, you know, what you're doing. And I worked in the legal industry for 20 years in criminal defense and as a general practice private investigator. I did litigation support in almost all areas of law, and I just, you know, honor you for what you're doing and admire your work.
Absolutely.
And Lana does as well, and we all do. We're grateful for you. And
it's an amazing, amazing concept and something that we should have embraced years ago.
We're very much into the idea of sovereignty, and many people in our expanded circles work with groups like are working in self-sustainable living, like Jonah Bolt with the Starseed Society. And we're working with members of our groups are working with New Earth Project, New Earth Nation. And, you know, you're bringing up a lot of words that buzzwords for us, like new paradigm and just a new way of thinking. And it's really exciting to hear you say all of this.
And I'm actually amazed that this was founded, what, back in the 1940s. Absolutely,
absolutely
amazed.
It was such novel thinking. And
yes,
just,
yes.
You know, so.
Can I ask you, David, I'm going to make a confession. I
sure.
actually wasn't aware of the World Service Authority before. so ignorant as it might be, but I'm not sure that other people are also aware of it. People are aware of the United Nations, but the World Service Authority, I think most, you know, people that aren't in political service circles might not be aware of it. What's the main difference between the two?
Like your mission statement and maybe your structure and whatnot, I guess is what Lana's asking.
Sure. Well, the United Nations was founded really because of the devastating events of World War II. The people who had worked on the League of Nations realized that that was a system that didn't function. In fact, that's what ended up leading to World War II. And nations decided that they needed to come together to deal with their squabbles. I mean, the whole purpose of the United Nations is to rid the world of the scourge of war. That's what it says in its mandate. But if you ever go to the United Nations, and I actually kind of find this a little bit funny, you will get a brochure as you walk in to take a tour. And one of the first things in the brochure that it states is, the United Nations is not a world government. So I laugh at that because really, the World Service Authority is the administrative branch of this world citizen government founded in the World Service Authority in 54 and the world citizen government in 53. So I would say one of the main differences in function between the United Nations and the World Service Authority or the world citizen government is that we are claiming global governmental status. That is, we are working even now, by issuing documents like the World Passport or registering people as world citizens, we are acting not yet, I would say, in macrocosm, but in microcosm to assist people in affirming their rights and responsibilities as any government should do. It should be a service to the people. And that's why we're providing these, for example, documentary and legal services to the global public to help them to exercise their rights as human beings first and foremost. So the nations come together in the United Nations that in a way to deal with each other, but they don't really deal with individuals. You can't be a citizen of the United Nations. So and one of the things, I'll let you interrupt me here in a second. One of the things that Gary Davis would always say was, well, the United Nations was in a sense dead on arrival. Nations don't unite. Only people do. So the main function of this world citizen government is to bring people together officially, legally, and politically as world citizens. So, and the point of it is so that if you kill someone on the streets of Baghdad or you kill someone on the streets of Washington, D.C., either way, that should be considered murder. But right now, it's not. War is legal. You can kill and potentially go home and be considered a hero. There's something inherently wrong with that ideology, with that human behavior, with that thought process.
And this is something we talk about with our colleagues and leaders of the spiritual community and people who work with us every day. We are talking about, we work with groups like World Peace Tree and just this idea, these concepts that you're talking about are fundamental to what Lana and I are doing and creating alliances with different groups and connecting with people and trying to just bring these basic fundamental human rights to the forefront and really promote that. And so what you're doing is just, exactly what we're doing.
It's so phenomenal.
And, yes.
It's more than human rights, though. I mean,
yes.
And as someone who works in the area of human psychology, what really amazes me is what you've done is you've re-identified the world as one, and you're basically,
right.
You've pulled down the boundaries between nations, and you're actually proclaiming that we're all one nation. That's amazing.
And this isn't just a legal principle. This is a basic human right that we are born with, I believe. Is that what you're trying to say here?
Oh, definitely. It's an innate right, which means we're born with it.
Yep.
And it's, I would say, an unalienable right, which means we cannot
yep.
give it up. We are born, and since you study the law, you know, usually citizenship is determined by jus soli and jus sanguinis, the right of the earth and the right of the blood. Well, where are we born? We're all born on planet Earth. That's the earth. That's the soil. Who are we born of? Of human parents. So when you put the idea of world citizenship, or the ideas of the word world and citizen together, citizens are the rights and responsibilities that we have within a particular communal framework. And when you add world to that, you're saying, well, that communal framework now is the world. And of course, we know, I would say one of sort of the revolutions in human understanding was when we were able to put a satellite outside of the Earth or into Earth's orbit and see the Earth as one. Well, now we really know that it is one. We were sort of like humans, sort of the joke about Christopher Columbus fearing that when he and his fellow travelers on their ships would come to the edge of the horizon, they'd fall off the planet because they weren't sure if it was a sphere or not. Well, as humans, it took that revolution, in a sense, to get into space to see the Earth as one so that we know it really is. And we know, what I like to say is, biologically, are you an American? Are you an Australian? Biologically, are you Ghanaian? No. Biologically, you are human. You are Homo sapien. You've got the
yeah.
same DNA, pretty much, as every other human being on the planet. So why, if we're all the same, why are we breaking ourselves down into these separate entities that only really serve to fight each other instead of work together? It doesn't make sense, especially in the 21st century and in the nuclear age, not to be working together when we see in every aspect of human life, whether it's the sciences and psychology of the brain, whether it's pollution and the environment, whether it's healthcare, whether it's communication and media, the fact that we can be talking here over thousands of miles of distance is
yes.
incredible. But how come on the political sphere, and this is why you were both right to say this is much more than just human rights. It is also, you could say, spiritual and political and social, economic, environmental, etc. Because we're saying that why are we still living in the horse and buggy, 1800s, when everything else about humanity and our living on this planet is global now? We know that. I mean, even a young child can get on a smartphone or on a computer and mm-hmm. speak to a friend, whether it's over Skype or Google Hangout or something, and they could be halfway around the world. So there is really no barrier there. The barriers now are really in our mind.
These international borders that we've created are imaginary concepts that we've created. And Lana likes to talk about the impermanence of life and non-attachment in terms of ownership. When you die, you no longer have possession of the things outside of yourself. The persons and places and things and situations that we perceive are imaginary concepts within our minds. Anybody can take your property away from you at any time through superior force, as they're doing in Ukraine with Russia. We don't own
yes.
this. This is our planet. It's not just our planet, but it belongs to every living creature, because we're also animal rights activists. And we must live in. We need to live in harmony with all living things have intrinsic value. And so you know, we need to respect life in general, and we need to respect human rights, and we need to realize that we are dependent on each other, and we're dependent on the environment, and it's in our interest to work together and, you know, hang together or hang alone, I guess, as they say. I forget what that saying is.
That's right. Well, definitely, I'm completely with you. The question of sustainability is something mm-hmm. that this World Citizen Government it wants to focus on, obviously. The question of understanding that there are what I would call third or fourth generation rights, where you can say, humans are really, no one owns the planet. In fact, we are really just here because we have some sentient knowledge. We are here to be stewards of the planet and protect it, not just for other humans, but like you said, for all creatures living or not, that are all beings or entities on this planet, in a sense for the universe, because we should be thankful to the universe that we are here and appreciate that. And I don't think that the nation state system allows us to easily do that, because it's a success driven and a competitive driven model, whereas world citizenship is a work together model.
Now, I can certainly see how this is the way of the future. Now, I can't see how we can get out of the mess of environmental problems and wars without a concept like that. The problem is, though, David, and that's David.
Not
my David. There's a lot of David in this program.
Yes, David's our problem solvers, aren't we?
Yeah, they are.
We joke around about that on Facebook about David's being problem solver.
But I guess the issue is you've taken a stand. You've got sort of legal parameters in place. You're stating that, you know, there is such a thing as world citizenship. How do other nations respond to you, though?
Right, good question.
I mean, you know, they do have nuclear weapons.
How are you seen by the rest of the world? And I believe that the power is within us and not without us.
Oh, so do I. But how do you how do you do that?
But you still have to deal with these world leaders and how they view you and how they interact with you and, you know, how they accept, do they or not accept your passports and your world documents, you know, and your ideology and whatnot. I guess that's a good question Lana's asking.
Yes.
Sure. Well, let me start with a phrase from Schopenhauer, a German philosopher, who said, "Truth passes through three phases. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. And third, it's accepted as self-evident." So you could say that the idea of, or the ideology even, of world citizenship, or of one world and one earth and one humanity, is passing through those three stages. Even though it's right there before our nose, it's clear that we are each human. It's clear already that we are world citizens by birth. And in fact, whether it's groups of people or whether it's nations, and certainly if it's national governments, those governments will tend to try to ridicule or violently oppose anything that affects their power structure. I mean, there are people who are making a lot of money off of war, making a lot of money off of the nation-state system, and they don't want it to change. And just like you mentioned with the paradigm shift, usually while a paradigm is shifting, there are a lot of grumbling and pushback against the sort of revolutionary change. And this is a revolutionary change, but it is won by peaceful means. And this goes back to Dr. Lana's earlier question as to why people, she may not have heard of World Service Authority and how it compares to the UN, only because there is such pushback. Nations don't want people to know that they can be anything other than a national citizen. They brand us. In fact, as soon as we come out of the womb, they brainwash us to sing national anthems. They want us to, in a sense, almost like a cult or a religion, believe that we are one thing, when really we're much more than that. Okay, so it is up to us. I agree with you. It's up to us. The power is within us to declare our self-determination, to declare our sovereignty. But until we know our human rights, we can't claim them. So there's a couple issues here. There's the issue of people not having the knowledge that they even have rights, and that is many people around the planet are sort of either starving or looking for their next meal, so they don't have the capacity to move up the hierarchy of needs to a higher level need to understand how we can work together, because they're just trying to fulfill their basic needs. So there's the impoverishment, you could say, of much of the global public who are just starving to death. So there's that issue because of the state of the nation state keeps them in, the status that it keeps them in. But also, there's the pushback, like you said, by national government leaders, by officials. So every day, for example, in WSA's legal department, we are dealing with this kind of, this sometimes harsh pushback against people, whether they're just trying to, like a Syrian family or Syrian refugees who fled Syria and trying to stay, whether it's in Jordan or Turkey or some other country, and those countries really don't want them to be there. They want to send them either back to Syria or somewhere else. So there's a pushback by the governments against the people who need help, who are trying to claim their human rights, from doing so. Because people, in a sense, are acting in a selfish way when they're acting in a nationalistic way. So we do have to legal letter writing campaigns to national governments to expose violations of human rights, to demand redress. On occasion, we will work through various international law mechanisms like the various courts of human rights. But because we know that some of these things are inadequate, we're actually working on creating our own, not our own, but humanity's, World Court of Human Rights. And there's an attorney in Burlington, Vermont, who we're going to be sending this December to an event of Chief Justices of the World in Lucknow, India, to talk about this new draft statute for a World Court of Human Rights, where individuals would have standing to deal with government or corporate or other violations of their human rights. And this would be both within and, I would say, outside of the nation-state system. We may need to get some buy-in from the current justices of national courts, but to have them act outside of the national jurisdictional framework. So we're trying to work, sometimes you could say, within the system, which we know is not really functioning because that human construct can't very well function, but we're also trying to work from outside the system. But either way, there is this pushback, because when you are trying to make peaceful but revolutionary change, it's not easily accepted. And that's why I would say we've been at this for 60 years. Could be another 60 years. It could be another 600 years that it takes for us to get to a peaceful world. But the point is that the peaceful idea of a peaceful world has to start somewhere. And we're saying it has to start now.
Yes, now is the only time. That's where our power to create is.
Exactly.
In the moment. So it's really important to do that now and take that action in the moment.
So, David, what I wanted to ask you is, are you actually getting anywhere? Are you getting any acknowledgement from any nations? Is there any...
Oh, well, sure.
I know you, but
I mean,
are you?
We get multiple acknowledgements in that. For example, we're unlike many human rights organizations. We don't just sort of monitor human rights violations. We actually participate in trying to resolve or intervene, trying to resolve specific individual or group violations of human rights. And we've been very successful. When I created our legal department, one of our main goals was to help the public in need, whether it's in using their world passport or in getting to a place where they needed to go, or in helping just a refugee who may not even have documents issued by our organization, but who needs help. So on many circumstances, through our legal briefs, our legal letter writing campaigns, we are helping people to either reach freedom that is in their lives, finding a safe haven, for example, getting their rights respected. And with regard, for example, to the World Passport, since it was first issued back in 1954, it has now been recognized by over 160 countries by national governments placing visa entry and exit stamps in World Passport holders' passports. Now, certainly the last 10 to 12 years have been very difficult because travel for everybody has been greatly restricted due to war, due to a fear of terrorism and violence, and even the global downturn in the economy has affected people's ability to easily exercise their right to travel. So certainly there is some frustration that we face, that we know that the people who carry WSA documents, or even who carry national documents, but from the developing world, who face these kinds of day-to-day frustrations in exercising their rights, and that's not always easy. It's frustrating. It's difficult, but we know that, you know, we're helping so many people that for every person we can't find a good solution to, there's always another person that we can. So yes, it's frustrating when we see that there's something, we wish there could be something more that we could do to help a particular person in a difficult situation, but sometimes the nation state is just so set on controlling this particular person or this group of people in a certain way that because of our limited, I would say limited funding and the limited knowledge about our organization, which we're trying to change, of course, now through social media, that we don't have the power that, say, Amnesty International might have or Human Rights Watch has to affect kind of immediate change in a particular person's life, at least on the kind of macro level. I mean, oftentimes what we do, we're working behind the scenes to try to help people, and so we don't, you know, always laud our successes to the world, and maybe we should. But sometimes it's more effective to be working behind the scenes where people don't always know all the day-to-day difficulties we have in trying to get people free or get them where they need to be with regard to their rights. So it's a difficult struggle. Some days I come into the office and think, wow, gosh, what struggles are going to be put before me today? But it's always, I'm never bored. I'm always excited to get into the office because I never know. I may have a list of five things that I want to get done that day. If I get even one thing done on that list, I'm very happy because I never know, you know, who's going to send an email, who's going to call and say, I really need your help. Can you help me get out of this difficult situation?
Well, so you're very much there at the grassroots level,
yeah,
aren't
I mean,
you?
Yeah, you really, yeah.
It's not just a sort
on
of
all levels.
Theoretical concept.
No, this is problem solving in action in real time, and I respect that because I certainly work behind the scenes because oftentimes that's the only way you can get things done is to just work in the backdrop and do what you can and really put all your determined effort into the project and the vision and trying to make it happen. And David, can you tell me how many members of the World Service Authority are there and how many passports have you issued?
Sure. Well, we don't really consider people to be members of World Service Authority as an organization. We do consider people to actually be world citizens. When we register them, we provide a world citizen card and a world citizen certificate. The card is in seven languages, English, French, Spanish, Russian, Chinese, Arabic, and Esperanto. And since 1948, when Gary Davis founded the Registry of World Citizens, there have been close to, I would say, about 2 million people around the world who have actually registered as world citizens, and we have issued with world passports in particular, we've issued about 750,000 world passports to people around the world since 1954, and we've issued about 5 or 6 million documents, because besides the world passport, we also issue a world identity card, a world birth card and birth certificate, a world political asylum card, a world marriage card and certificate, and all the documents we issue are reaffirming our innate rights that have been stated, for example, in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Like Article 1 of the Declaration says all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. We're endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood or community. And that, for example, our World Birth Certificate, just a quick example of the effectiveness on a very local level. There was a couple living in Russia, but they were not ethnically Russian. And they had a child who was born there, but the Russian government did not want to identify the child. They did not want to give the child a birth certificate because he wasn't ethnically Russian. Well, this was frustrating to them and caused certain problems, so they applied for their child to have a world birth certificate, which we issued. And then we got the birth certificate apostille, which means we got a certification on top of it. But with the birth certificate and that apostille, the parents were then able to get the child's inoculations, that he was able to go to the doctor and get his shots, but he was also able to go to school. Without that world birth certificate, he would have been stuck without getting proper medical care and without affecting his right to freedom of education.
Wow,
that's a story. That's amazing.
I can see that we should really try to get a longer show. I guess I can see that we're pressured to get a lot of information out. But this is really informative, and I know our listeners really appreciate what you're saying. And could you give us your website and your contact information and some information on how people can
participate? Yeah, how do we become world citizens?
Yes.
How do we become?
Sure.
How do we get a world citizen?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that, Dr. Lown and David, because sometimes when people hear about registering as a world citizen, they wonder, does that mean I have to give up something else, my lower level allegiance? No. When you register as a world citizen, you're really only adding a higher allegiance. We're always citizens of our family, of our town, our city, of our region, maybe of our hemisphere, of the world, of the Milky Way galaxy, of the universe. So we're always multiple citizens. So you don't have to give up any lower level allegiance when you register. But to register is a very simple process. Our website address is www.worldservice.org, worldservice.org. And at the website, there are application forms to register as a world citizen, to apply for the world passport. You just simply have to download and print out those forms and fill them out, and you can either email the forms to us, and our main email address is info@worldservice.org. So the forms can be either emailed or posted to our offices, our headquarters in Washington, D.C., and then the documents will be issued. So it's a question of filling them out, signing them. Usually the forms will need some form of certification, like a notarization or a fingerprint at a minimum. And then it's a simple process of submitting them and applying.
Oh, I'm sorry, we lost you for a few seconds there, David. We have
okay.
A couple of technical difficulties, and so there's a little bit of a glitch here. No worries. I think we're back on and we're good. Please continue.
Okay. So I'm not sure what you missed. All I was simply saying was it's easy to register as a world citizen or to apply for the world passport by accessing the application forms from our website. And for people who don't have internet access, although they may not be hearing this show, perhaps, but we do mail out application forms to people pretty much all over the world. If they don't have internet access, we're happy to mail out forms to people in places where they need the form mailed.
Okay.
I'm thinking, David, that the more people that join, I guess the greater the power.
Sure, strength in numbers.
Exactly.
And, just
well,
that vision
that's
forward.
So true, and that's true about the recognition of the passport. It's true about the status of world citizen. I mean, any government, in a sense, gets its power or authority from the people, or any effective democratic, I guess, a participatory government does. And what we're saying is the more people who join and understand that we are world citizens and want to claim that authority, you're right, the more powerful the actual government will become. But even the world citizen government, and your listeners should know, is a human construct. It really is a fiction like any other government. But we know that it's a fiction that will be useful to us as human beings, not one that will be harmful like the nation-state system has been.
Well, to be fair, I guess I've found that some countries are much easier to operate in than others in terms of documents, and I found that Australia is very different from the United States in terms of bureaucracy and red tape, and they've been very accommodating to me. So there are differences, but nonetheless.
Oh, definitely, that's true.
Yeah, my next question though is, how do you feel about I've found in the spiritual community and in any kind of group settings and with organizations and people that I'm working with, there's beliefs and ideologies that get in the way of progress and people uniting, and we work. And I don't put a lot of value in terms of belief systems. I put more value in relationships and cooperating together towards the shared vision. But how do you feel about working with other people and other organizations who have other ideologies and projects such as New Earth Nation and some of these other groups
the Venus
that we're working
projects.
With? And, right.
Yeah, because there is a growing movement towards sovereignty and
right.
self-sustainable living.
Oh, definitely. Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Venus Project as one in particular. Jacques Fresco, just like Gary Davis, is a visionary to see that the world could be one where we enjoy the aesthetic things about life and have fun rather than do the menial drudgery that makes living sometimes frustrating or difficult or for many people really, really, makes their lives hard or difficult. So definitely we want to work with other organizations, with individuals to promote this idea of the fact that we have one world and we need to protect it. It's our only home. It's our parent, and unless we protect it, we're all goners. I mean, that's Gary Davis would always say to me, David, who are you? And I'd be like, what do you mean, Gary? And he's like, well, who are you? In this 21st century, if you don't know who you are, then we're gone. We have to know that we're human or sentient beings first and foremost. If we don't claim that status, then our maybe lower level allegiances are going to force us to get rid of each other or to destroy our only parent, our only home, planet Earth. So certainly we want to work together with New Earth and Venus Project and others.
Yes, can I ask you, have you already got a relationship with New Earth and Venus Project, or is that something?
That is something that we're interested in. I hear the buzzword a lot, alliances and allies, and that's what Lana and I do. We're sort of connectors, and this is what we do on our show is we
connect people and groups together to try to, you know, that diversity of ideologies, I believe, is a strength in our individual projects. Oh, yeah. Make us more effective in our missions.
So is that something that you are starting to develop already, or is that a thing of the future?
It is, but it's, once again, it's sort of more on a quiet, lower level. Actually, the newest project, funny thing, I only just heard about that last week myself. Venus Project I've known about for about 10 years, and we've written, I think, to, in the past, or Gary Davis has, to Jacques Fresco to support his work and to see if he would also support a world citizenship. There are other groups locally. There's a women's or gender violence group that we've worked with locally in the D.C. area to help immigrant women. So there's a lot of alliances that we've worked through over the years. Sometimes it's hard though, because each group has its own focus, and we almost need some bigger organization to keep bringing us back together, and not so that we don't keep falling into our own kind of parochial focus, which for us, of course, is world citizenship and human rights, whereas for another organization, although it might border on that idea, it might still be a little bit nuanced or a little bit different than that. I would appreciate the two of you providing us with assistance with coming together with some of these other groups, if you have links with them, in a much more substantial way.
Because we have seen that there's been some hindrance in terms of progress because of the competing interests with projects and things that all these groups are doing. And it's great that we can't have every role, and we can't push every project, so we need to work on our missions and what we're meant to do towards this shared vision. And I did actually invite, I did send an email to Jacques. I haven't heard back from him. And there's also another person that we've invited that I did hear from last week, who you may be familiar with, Michael Tellinger with Ubuntu, which Lana's more familiar with than I am, and I know where New Earth Nation works with him. It's a sort of a barter system. Are you familiar with that at all?
That one I haven't heard about either. Once again, I sometimes feel like we're closed off even from each other, and I don't know whether that's sometimes I feel like a conspiracy theory is going on, like we're being blocked by the powers that be from reaching that higher coherence and working together.
That's how I've often felt. I'm like, boy, it feels almost like an orchestrated attack on humanity to keep all of us separated and almost to prevent us from sort of creating this new paradigm, mm-hmm. this unity. And we can certainly work, we need to work within the framework of our circumstances. We want to do this peacefully, and we want to make positive change in the world. And, so hopefully we're able to do this.
The other thing is, apart from the fact that there might be a push against this, I guess the fact is the world is really big. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of people with the same ideas. Mm. And we don't want to recreate the wheel.
No.
If you've got the Venus Project, you've got New Earth focusing on sovereignty and how to be sustainable. If we've got the World Services Authority providing a legal framework, we really should be connecting and uniting, because that's the only way we're going to go forward. We don't want to fall into the trap, which has been the problem throughout humanity.
Yeah, I want to do it my way. My way is the only
right.
one
my
right way,
not
way of
your
thinking.
Way. That's right. The way forward is to unite.
There's a lot of power struggle, even within the spiritual community. Can
That's
be
right.
that way, and that makes things really difficult. Mm. So it's really sort of fulfilling your role,
this
cooperating, collaborating with other groups and people, and using your talents and services. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I was going to say this conversation is really reinvigorating my enthusiasm, and I'm going to reach out, I think, even tomorrow if I can, to the New Earth Nation and see where we have overlap and see where we can help each other. I think this would be amazing.
Absolutely.
Yes, and that's basically what I think we're here to do. And then there are many, many other, we connect with many other leaders from the spiritual community, from many other
the paradigms
areas of,
Right.
We work with, we've been
animal
with,
rights and in fact, another paradigm I was going to introduce that is perhaps taking it one level further, what the World Service Organization is focusing on is the fact that we are all one humanity. However, I wonder if we take it one step further, I wonder whether we should start recognizing non-human beings. And in fact, in India, of all places, they've recently recognized dolphins as, you know, as what do they call them, as non-human beings.
Conscious and, beings
and
with
having,
life.
And having rights.
Again, and that's what we said about taking responsibility for the planet and respecting the planet and sort of the law of equilibrium, just staying in balance with all the other conscious beings on the planet that we depend on, the food chain, and just realizing that you can't knock down rainforests and make species go extinct and not expect to have that have a negative impact on our own race.
So I wonder, David, whether in the future we're going to have some legal, you know, basis for ratifying the animal, you know, animals as, you know, non-human beings with rights, maybe trees as having rights. I mean, maybe those are the further levels that we need to go to in order to, you know, help preserve the earth.
And certainly the work that David and the rest of us are all doing here in the moment is going to have an effect on whether this all works and the work that people do in the future with these things, because this will hopefully go on long after we're gone.
And the exciting thing about all of this is it challenges all these concepts that you have never challenged, like, you know, the concept of the fact that countries, nations are just there as a, you know, it's just a concept. It doesn't really exist.
They're all concepts that we need to realize and realize that the beliefs are not as important as the relationships
that
we're building.
That's right. Yeah. It's been a pleasure having you on our show, and we really want to
thank you.
Thank you for being on our show, and thank you for all the selfless work you and others in the World Service Authority are doing behind the scenes, helping people at the grassroots level.
Yeah, we'll certainly pass your name on to some of our other media moguls. We have quite a few. I've been on many radio shows myself, even on BBS Radio Network, and even one of the producers of the show, Doug, has been on our show, and it's just been an amazing experience for us to connect with people like yourself. And So
perhaps we can have you back at a later show to talk. Thank you very much, and goodbye to everybody.
Yeah, we'll try to connect with you offline at some point, David.
Excellent.
Thank you for being on our show.
I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you so much for letting me share the idea of world citizenship a little bit more. That's wonderful.
Fantastic. It's been great. Bye now.